This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Eschelbach, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Eschelbach.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now, the pro-life news.
Reading from an Indiana Right to Life press release on Monday, June 27th, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down two provisions in a comprehensive 2013 pro-life Texas law. The provisions protected women seeking abortions by requiring that abortion doctors maintain hospital admitting privileges and required abortion facilities to meet standards for ambulatory surgical centers. Now, Kathy, how does this court ruling affect Indiana laws?
Well, that's a very good question, Scott, and we still don't have a complete answer. I would remind listeners that we have two similar laws already on the books here in Indiana, one for admitting privileges and one for abortion facility licensure. The differences are that our admitting privileges allow the doctor to have a backup physician who has admitting privileges in a county or a contiguous county where the abortion is performed. And also, it's an abortion licensing procedure as opposed to requiring abortion facilities to meet surgical center standards. We think that the way those laws are written here in Indiana, that we will be okay. However, the overarching bottom line on the Supreme Court decision is that this could adversely affect any and all future and laws that are currently on the books that regulate abortion facilities. We have legal experts looking at this right now, and hopefully our plan is to have Steve Aden of the Alliance Defending Freedom on our program next week to help us fully understand the impact of this, because it sounds like it's far more invasive and far-reaching than we originally thought.
Along those same lines, reading from another Indiana Right to Life press release, on Thursday, June 30th, Judge Tanya Walton Pratt of the U.S. Court for the Southern District of Indiana granted Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky's request for an injunction against Indiana's Dignity for the Unborn law before it could take effect on July 1st. The Dignity for the Unborn law prohibits abortions for the sole reason of the child's gender, race, national origin, or a potential disability, among other measures. Pratt, an appointee of President Obama, has a history of siding with the abortion lobby. She blocked provisions of a 2011 Indiana law that denied taxpayer funds to abortion businesses and required that pregnant women be told about an unborn child's ability to feel pain. Indiana Right to Life President and CEO Mike Fichter has urged the state to appeal the decision.
Regular listeners to this program are very familiar with the fact that in the 2016 legislative session, we passed legislation that protects the least of the least of these in the state of Indiana. That bill was very comprehensive, but one of the parts of the bill protects the unborn who have disabilities in any other classification that born people are protected under: race, sex, national origin, all those things, including disabilities. Several years ago, we began airing information that had to do with perinatal hospice and palliative care. And Amy Kiebelbeck may be a name that you're familiar with. She's been a guest on this program, helping us understand what this is all about. In those early years of learning about this project, we hosted a seminar, and one of the attendees was Robin Adkins, who's our guest today. Robin is a licensed counselor and owner of Cara Se Veritas here in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Welcome, Robin. We're so glad to have you here with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I know that this is a passion of yours. Back in those early days when we began talking about perinatal hospice and palliative care, what drew you to that first seminar?
The very first time I got interested in this topic, I actually didn't even know that was the name of it, but it was because of a loss that I had had, prenatal loss, and there was not really any options given to me when I was first diagnosed with potential miscarriage. It was just, we're going to schedule for D&C, and that was it.
So maybe we should hit the pause button here. We probably got into your story a little more quickly than we should have. Let's go back and define what perinatal hospice and palliative care is. And then you could share with us your passion for the program.
Sure. Perinatal hospice and palliative care is really designed to help the parents make decisions that best fit their beliefs, needs, and help them keep their integrity throughout the process when they're giving any kind of high-risk diagnosis. It may be terminal, it may not be terminal for a child in utero, but what it does is it allows them to gather as much information as possible about their options and choices rather than just assuming that termination is their only option.
So what are some examples of an adverse prenatal diagnosis that you might address?
Okay, so trisomy 18 would be an example. Unfortunately, these days, Down syndrome is considered a condition that is often parents are told to terminate. Encephaly, there's a lot of different diagnoses, but those would be the general.
The legislation that was passed in this session protects those children from being abortion victims just because they have an adverse prenatal diagnosis of a disability.
Correct.
And also part of that law, which is being challenged in court, but nonetheless, is a requirement that a physician, when giving the diagnosis, sharing that with the patient, shares information about support groups and services that are out there. We have been at a loss, a lack of resources for parents who receive that information, and I think doctors have too. So back to your story, you found yourself in a difficult pregnancy, and the doctor's first response was, we're going to abort this baby, but he didn't say it in that way.
Actually, I was a nurse practitioner, not an OB.
All right.
I just want to say that to clarify, I was not
sure.
One of the OBs I've worked with. But her response to me was, you have a blighted ovum, which is an empty egg. Of course, the word blight, though, is a much more negative connotation than empty. And I just find it interesting that she used that wording. But it was a blighted ovum. We're just going to get rid of it. I'll schedule you for a DNC next week. And at that point, I don't know if you remember, I called you in a panic because that's not something I had ever considered as an option for myself. And I was given no other option. Fortunately, I was able to get connected with another OB that allowed me to make decisions over the next 3 weeks to fight for the life of that child. While I did ultimately lose that child, we were able to hear the heartbeat and get a recording of that. And just the knowledge that, nope, there was a child there and that I fought as hard as I could to save that child gave me so much more peace than just, it's done, it's over.
So had you stayed with the nurse practitioner's advice and gone ahead with a DNC, which in fact would be a very early term abortion, I know it's difficult for you to rewind and think how what that outcome would have felt like to you, but do you think that you had a better outcome because you fought for your child's life as opposed to just following the advice you were given initially?
Absolutely. And the moment she told me that in the office, I couldn't speak. I was so emotionally overcome. And I don't think that that place would have changed for me had I just gone ahead with the DNC. And actually, the research shows that parents that are offered perinatal hospice and palliative care, even if they choose termination, if they're offered it and seek it out, do better than those who don't follow through and use that program.
So these services are beginning to sprout up all across the state and across the nation, and long overdue, I might add. There are really two pieces to this and maybe more, but from a layman's point of view, I see the physical piece of an adverse prenatal diagnosis and also the psychological piece. Am I correct in assuming, since you're a licensed counselor, that you address the psychological and emotional needs of a family going through that situation?
Absolutely. And that's a really great point to make. I don't address the medical side of it. What I do is I work with the client's chosen medical professionals from their OB to the nurses, to the hospitals, to make sure that I am not giving any incorrect information or stepping on the toes of anybody that would have that medical knowledge. I'm just providing the client with the psychological space to work through what are my options and what fits best for me.
So you found yourself in this situation. You found a doctor who was willing to walk alongside you as the Lord allowed you to keep this child as whatever short time was allocated, came through that situation. And as with many difficulties in our lives, oftentimes something good springs out of it. And this is, I know you pretty well, Robin, and you just overflow with compassion and concern for people who are going through a similar circumstance who may not know where to turn. If someone is in that situation and is listening, or I would encourage our listeners to just remember this information. When you get an adverse prenatal diagnosis, what is your advice to the parents receiving that if the doctor says, and we can fix that and you can try again in 8 weeks?
My first advice would be, don't make any decisions in the next 24 hours. My first bit of advice, obviously pray Secondly, ask your provider for all the resources they have to assist with understanding that diagnosis. And all the resources, meaning, do they have financial resources? Is there social resources? Is there community resources and mental health resources? Almost all of the OBs in town have my information to offer. And I am the only perinatal hospice and palliative care therapist that I am aware of in the area, but they all have my brochures. But I would definitely encourage them to seek that out. If not, Google it.
Do you have a website?
I do. It's caris@veritasllc.com, and I'll spell that.
Okay.
CharisetVeritasllc.com.
Okay, great. Now, your practice is pretty much in the northeast part of the state. We're aware of perinatal hospice and palliative care programs in other parts of the state as well. If someone contacts you, can you get them in touch with someone in their community if there's a program available?
Yes, if there's a program available, sure. And if not, I can help them find the closest one to them.
Okay, great. Give that website one more time.
It's caris@veritasllc.com. And I can give my work phone number.
Please do.
That would be helpful too. 260-918-4686.
Now, we've said Caris Veritas several times. That's not a name that rolls off the tongue of someone who only knows English. How'd you come up with that name?
It's a great question. And part of me kind of regrets when I have to repeat that email that I chose that name. But what I wanted to do was convey to those who might be interested in seeking out a little bit further my background, that the most important things to me are grace and truth. Mm-hmm. And I think in every counseling situation, whether it's a Christian counselor or not, our goal is to help the client find the truth with grace. So charis means grace in Greek, and veritas means truth in Latin.
Well, very good. Very good message to remember. You are a licensed counselor, and so you are focusing on issues that have to do with the unborn and infertility, high-risk pregnancy, et cetera. Let's just run through some of the things that you are including in your practice. Robin, let's talk about high-risk pregnancy. What does that mean?
High-risk pregnancy is any adverse diagnosis to mother or child during pregnancy. So as an example, I had hyperemesis with my second pregnancy.
And what's that?
Hyperemesis is often well known because Princess Kate had it in both of her pregnancies. But unfortunately, I did not have the same quality of care that a princess gets. Not Fort Wayne's fault, just the way things go. But it's extreme vomiting. So I lost 20 pounds within the first 3 weeks of my pregnancy.
Oh my goodness.
And was on bed rest and received fluids at the cancer unit. And it was just a very stressful time in my pregnancy. And during that time, I was homebound and was seeking therapy, and nobody could provide home care. So that kind of brought out my desire to help other individuals that have any high-risk diagnosis seek the psychological care they would need during that
time. So if a condition comes up that requires bed rest for the mother, there are a lot of issues that go along with that, especially if there are children that she's attempting to care for and obviously other facets of life. You can come alongside her and help her work through some of those issues?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, we've talked a lot about perinatal hospice and palliative care. The whole idea of coming alongside a family who gets an adverse prenatal diagnosis and understanding that we are given our children for an amount of time that the Lord decides. And we see much better outcomes for people who are in that circumstance. We're not negating the shock and the disappointment, the anxiety that comes along with a diagnosis like that. But we're finding that families that choose to love that baby as long as they can, however much time the Lord allows them, have a much better outcome. Have we missed anything that you'd like to say about perinatal hospice and palliative care, Robin?
The only other thing I would like to say is we're also finding interesting benefits to the family as a whole. Mm-hmm. The divorce rate among families where there's been an infant lost, even a child lost, is 80%.
Wow.
And we are seeing a huge drop in that for couples that participate in palliative care and perinatal hospice.
And part of that is, as I understand it from previous guests, is developing a life plan for this child in a way that only the Lord can provide, celebrating that child's life. That child is a human created by God and given to us as a gift, even with some of the extra difficulties that might come along with this particular pregnancy.
That, and also men and women respond to trauma and grief very differently. Mm-hmm. So going through perinatal hospice and palliative care gives them the space to understand each other and how they're grieving differently and what needs they can meet in each other and what needs they need to take to God.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, this is Kathy Humbarger. You're listening to I Choose Life News and Views. Our special guest is owner and licensed counselor of Caris A Veritas, Robin Adkins. We're talking about all things to do with pregnancy-related issues that might be a complication. We've worked through high-risk pregnancy and perinatal hospice and palliative care. I see that you attend to issues having to do with traumatic birth.
Yes. Traumatic birth can be everything from an unexpected loss at birth with no prior diagnosis. Traumatic birth could be a situation where the baby has to be in the NICU, and that was not expected prior to birth. Traumatic birth can also be a woman that was planning on having a natural birth and ended up with a cesarean section. Mm. For a lot of women, myself included, that ends up being an emergency or high-risk situation that is very traumatic and unexpected. And as women, we were created to perform this natural birth. We've been mm-hmm. doing it there for thousands of years. So being unable to fulfill that natural desire within us can cause a lot of distress.
And I would imagine that there are a lot of things that I haven't thought of that go along with having a child in the NICU. Sadness and anxiety that goes along with leaving a child at the hospital and going home with empty arms, knowing that the child is receiving the very best care possible, yet wanting to be with the newborn and maybe having children at home and all kinds of other stressors. You've been through that, haven't you?
Yeah, actually, a lot of my practice comes out of personal experience. Mm-hmm. And my second pregnancy that I had hyperemesis, I delivered 8 weeks early and my son was in the NICU for a month and I had a 2-year-old daughter at home.
Oh, my.
So I was doing day shift at home, 12 hours at home, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., I was at the hospital.
Oh, my.
So round the clock feedings, bathing at night, I was getting about 4 hours of sleep. Mm. It wasn't just the trauma of our own situation. My son was pretty stable. We knew he had a 90% survival rate. So that provided some comfort. But the people around us weren't experiencing such wonderful rates. So you experience a lot of different variety of survival.
And it can be a roller coaster.
It is a roller coaster.
One day's good and the next day not.
Yes. And what I saw in other families was they didn't have joint support from all their extended family. It's, I would see families with his family in one waiting room, her family in another, and they were feuding while they're in there and their babies possibly passing away. So when I was there, I had asked for, again, a therapist to come in and work with me through my issues, and no one was available to do that.
And additionally, the baby might be transferred out of the city, and then you have additional complications with that. So a lot of issues to be dealt with, and none of these are to be minimized or swept under the rug, which I think may be part of the problem that we've done in the past. But we need to deal with the issues at hand and attempt to come to a healthy resolution. And that's what you're all about, Robin, and I really appreciate that. You also do grief and loss counseling. Tell us a little bit about what that entails.
Sure. I do grief and loss counseling, not just with the loss of a child, but grief is just one of those topics that I specialize in general. I would say right now about a quarter of my clientele is dealing with grief that doesn't involve the loss of a child. I started doing group grief counseling in 2005, and I've just something that I've been passionate about and something I'm very comfortable talking about. And I think that's really important. A lot of people aren't very comfortable, and like you said, like to shove that grief under the rug and just get rid of it. And I just really like to help people through that process and know that there's hope again.
Healthy healing does not mean putting a Band-Aid over it and ignoring the pain.
Exactly.
While we're talking about grief, let's not fail to take a few minutes to discuss post-abortion issues. In my opinion, there are two victims of an abortion. Obviously, the baby who loses their life. Additionally, the mother that does not magically become not pregnant. She becomes the mother of a dead baby that is not acknowledged. She walks out of the abortion facility, wants her life back, but that's a very difficult thing to accomplish because she doesn't have the normal grief process to go through. Oftentimes, she doesn't want anybody to know, which is why she had the abortion in the first place. And if people do know that she's had an abortion, they may not understand how she could be grieving. I'd like you to talk to two aspects of this issue, Robin. One is to anyone who's listening who has experienced an abortion, been touched by an abortion, be it daughter, mother, sibling, drove somebody to the abortion facility, whatever, this touches many, many people. And also, if you would speak to those who have not had an abortion, can't imagine ever considering an abortion, about the importance of having compassion for those who have felt trapped and that that's their only way out.
Sure. I'm going to start with those who have had some kind of experience with abortion. Often they receive one of three kind of responses from people. The first response might be a celebration of the woman's right to choose, mm-hmm. and they get celebrated for their choice. Another would be one of disdain and contempt. How could you ever do that? And the third being compassion. And my experience with this is that whatever a woman's reason for choosing so, and whatever her experience is after, she should have the ability to work through mm-hmm. her situation, her emotions, and come to a place of hope and peace in the end. I don't think, from my point of view as a therapist, how she arrived at that is as important as where she goes with it in the future. And I think whether a woman thinks her choice was right or not, she can be helped to come to an understanding of where peace and grace lies in the future. Speaking to those who can't imagine anyone ever choosing this, I can say I can relate to that greatly. I started my early adulthood with that point of view and was truly disgusted by it at that age. And what I've come to realize now is that life choices aren't so simple, and people are often put in situations they don't realize they'll ever be in. One side of this issue many people don't talk about is the father's side of it.
Right.
Many men don't get to choose whether or not their child is brought to life, and that they still have to carry the stigma of having an aborted child. So I think that for someone who can't imagine this, why anyone would choose it, I think it's important for them to stop and consider this other person is a human with a story, not just a single event in their life. And their story doesn't stop the day the abortion happens. And our job is to continue to help them grow and help them heal and point them to a better, more peaceful ending to their story.
And every abortion decision is unique. I became involved in the Right to Life cause over 30 years ago because a dear friend of mine shared with me that she'd made an abortion decision, and she asked me if I'd still be her friend. Well, I knew abortions were going on, but I didn't think about anybody that I knew that would have an abortion. And I, of course, I quickly assured her that I would still be her friend, and she helped me understand how it feels as best she could to be trapped and feel that there's no way out. And after all, it's legal. And you believe the lie that for a price, an abortionist can grace the life of the baby, and don't find out till afterwards that there is no way that can happen. That was before post-abortion Bible studies and the good work that you're doing even existed. So I count it an honor and a privilege to have walked with her through her grief and pain. She found healing at the foot of the cross of the Lord Jesus Christ, which is where I go for every sin I've committed. This is not the unforgivable sin, but the Lord drew me into this work because of my compassion for a woman who had chosen an abortion. I love babies, want to save everyone I can, but I also recognize the hurting women behind these decisions. And as you rightly said, oftentimes the fathers who either don't know until afterwards or encourage the abortion or any other place along that spectrum that you can be. So I really commend you for recognizing this and reaching out to women who are struggling. And if anyone's listening, please understand that there is hope and healing. The Lord doesn't want you to stay in this prison cell of regret. So I'll get out of my pulpit now and we'll get on with the discussion.
If you don't mind, I'd like to share why my decision changed so much.
Okay.
And like I said, in my early 20s, I was very much from a point of view of disgust by abortion. And then I found myself, I having made a few poor choices, as we all do in life, in a situation where I felt like I could possibly be pregnant with a child with a mental disability that I didn't think I could live with, and chose to take the morning after pill. And at that time, I didn't even consider that abortion. It was within 48 hours. Who knows if I was even pregnant? And it wasn't till many, many years later, when I had my first daughter, the day she was born, it fully came full circle, and I realized what I had done. Mm. And I'm there in the hospital room crying tears of joy over this beautiful little girl that I've waited so long for, and tears of a possible baby that I won't meet until I go home.
Right.
So at that point, it fully hit me that abortion is much more than just something that happens in a clinic. It can happen in multiple different ways. And many people don't even understand the impact of that till years later.
Exactly. Well, I really appreciate the fact that the Lord has called you and equipped you to address pain that comes in many ways and in many different circumstances. I want to touch on this last one, and that's infertility and adoption. As we think about almost 1 million babies being aborted every year in the United States and so many people desperately wanting to be a parent and just baffled at the thought that these babies are being dismembered and discarded on a regular basis, and they so desperately want a child, that pain has to be intense and unimaginable unless you've been through it.
Mm-hmm. And I was told at a very young age I would never have children, but I tell people the time, my God is bigger than medicine, and I'm my fourth now.
Right.
So obviously those doctors were wrong. So I haven't actually experienced the pain of infertility, but I've watched many people go through that. And I'm not going to go into politics, but I will say our society makes it very difficult to pursue fertility financially and to pursue adoption. I think it's very important that I just note here that not everybody that struggles with infertility goes on to pursue adoption. And some people pursue adoption that aren't infertile. A friend of mine helped me understand the pain they were experiencing with infertility when everybody just assumed they would adopt. And that was not a choice they could make. So I think our society in general just makes it very difficult mm-hmm. for people to take the unwanted babies. So the struggle isn't just, I can't have my own, or I want to adopt and it takes 2 to 5 years to complete that process, but that there are so many hoops mm-hmm. that we put in a place to get through to be able to achieve that.
Some of them well-intentioned and some of them are just plain baffling, including why the Lord would give a child to somebody who would be a very much of a crisis when there's another couple over here. That's one of the questions on my list when I see the Lord. Well, we're so glad to have had you spend some time with us. Robin Adkins, licensed counselor and owner of Caris e Veritas. Give us your website again and your phone number and any final thoughts that you have that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Okay. The website is caris@veritasllc.com. The phone number is 260-918-4686. And I would just encourage your listeners to, whether they're experiencing any of these issues themselves or know someone that is experiencing those issues, to respond first with prayer, second with compassion, and third, help them get connected to whatever resources are available.
They don't have to shoulder this burden alone. None of us were put here to walk this road alone. And thank you so much, Robin, for being one of those people who the Lord has called to walk alongside so many people as they walk through various stages of grief in a variety of circumstances. Thank you so much for what you do and for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. And I just pray that I bring Him glory in the steps I take.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.